Welcome to the eighth week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are in Genesis chapter number 17 today, as we see the establishment of circumcision as a sign of a covenant between Abram and He Who Is. And this is the way that that information is given to us. When Abram was 99 years old, and by the way, that would be on my calendar system around 2077 BC. When Abram was 99 years old, He Who Is appeared to Abram and said to him, "I am El Shaddai." Now, more than likely, your text says God Almighty. But I want you to be aware that there is an alternate understanding of Shaddai rather than a strong one. A shad in Hebrew is the chest muscle, the pectoral muscle, or the breast area. And yes, if you could imagine somebody that has big pecs, strong chest muscles, then they are almighty. And that's how often in the later Old Testament Greek, El Shaddai is translated as Pantocrator, or all-powerful. But in the book of Genesis, the very first Old Testament book that was written, the Greek text there translates Shaddai, or El Shaddai, as My God, or Your God. And so it's the idea of the chest area, the bosom area, giving a sense of intimacy. And therefore, God is my God. And so I want you to be aware that I think that's the better original idea of the name El Shaddai in the book of Genesis. So I am El Shaddai, or Your God, walk before me and be blameless, that I may make my covenant between me and you and may multiply you greatly. So God appears to him again, speaks to him again, and tells him, I want this special relationship with you and your family. I want to increase your family, but you need to be holy as I am holy, effectively. He doesn't use that phraseology here, but he does say, walk before me and be blameless. Abram's response is one of worship. Abram fell on his face, and God said to him, Behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I have made you the father of a multitude of nations. So it is at this time, about almost a quarter of a century after Abram had arrived in the Promised Land, and we're not sure exactly how long before he left Ur of the Chaldees, that he became a follower of the one true God. But probably it's safe to say that we're within, say, 35 years or so of his original conversion. God tells him, I want to change your name as a reminder from here on out of the promise that I've made to you. So God just simply has him add the H sound, a very soft sound, right there in the middle of his name. And just by doing that, it changes his name from Exalted Father to the Father of a great nation, or a great multitude of nations. And then he continues on with this promise. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make you into nations, and kings shall come from you. So very specific promises here. He's going to have a lot of descendants tied back to him. We've talked about that issue before. There's no problem seeing that fulfilled. He's going to have multitudes of ethnic groups that are going to be related to him, and that is also true. He's also going to have royalty, kings, plural, coming from his line. Very true. Verse 7, "And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your offspring after you. And I will give to you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojourning, all of the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God." So God wants to have this enduring relationship with Abram and all of his kids. Now, we're typically going to think about Isaac and then into Jacob, who turns into Israel, who then has the 12 boys who turn into the 12 tribes of Israel. That's usually what we think of as the offspring of Abraham, who is going to be in the promised land and have this ongoing relationship with the one true God. And that is going to be the focus of Scripture. But there are other groups that will also be recipients of God's grace that are going to be part of that enduring covenant, particularly in the new covenant. Because remember, the ultimate seed of Abraham, or Abraham, is Jesus himself, Yehoshua HaMashiach. Just go to Galatians chapter 3. Paul makes a big deal out of that idea. And so anyone and everyone who embraces Jesus as their Messiah is able to be part of the fulfillment of this promise to Abraham. Verse 9, "God said to Abraham, as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your offspring after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your offspring after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised." Now, circumcision existed in the world, and particularly in the Middle East, in select areas and groups already by this time. The date we're looking at here is somewhere around 2077 BC. But this is going to be a new usage of it that is going to be focused on the coming of the seed, the coming of the promised offspring, and particularly the coming of the seed, Yehoshua. Now, what is circumcision about? Verse 11, "You shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you." So circumcision is a fairly simple surgical procedure. Snips a little bit of the foreskin of the male penis off, and it changes the look of an adult male in particular that we're talking about here. And it is a daily sight. I don't want to be too graphic, but because of the needs for going to the bathroom and doing daily hygiene and things like that, every male is quite well familiar with their sexual organ. And so every day, a circumcised member of Abraham's family would be reminded, I am part of a promised covenant. Verse number 12 says, "He who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised." Now that is interesting from a physiological viewpoint, because we know that vitamin K and another enzyme that's available in the blood from birth are kind of low on the first few days of an infant's life. But right around the eighth day, vitamin K seems to spike at its highest point in the boy's entire life, the man's entire life. And then it levels off to its 100% normal level. So if you're going to do a surgical procedure where there's going to be bleeding, the eighth day would be the best time to do it. Every male throughout your generations, whether born in your house or bought with your money from any foreigner who is not of your offspring, both he who was born in your house and he who was brought up with your bought up with your money shall surely be circumcised. So shall my covenant be in your flesh, an everlasting covenant. So Abraham is told, anyone that is related to you in any fashion, if they are born into your community, that is, a member of your actual family, or a member of your employee's family, because the employees all lived in the tent city with Abraham and Sarai, and anyone that is brought into that community, perhaps they purchase the indebtedness contract of a slave somewhere and bring them in their community. Any of them that are males have to be circumcised because they're part of Abraham's immediate family. Verse 14, any uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. Now, this cut off from his people has kind of a double-leveled meaning. One of them has the sense of excommunication, that if you don't want to live by the rules, by the standards, then you're out of here. But there is also the idea, if you still want to stick around and you insist on breaking the rules of the community, you will be executed if you keep that up. And it's all because God expects all the members of Abraham's family to keep this covenant. Verse 15. God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. And so he does the same thing with Sarai's name that he just did with Abram's name. He adds the H sound. This time it's at the end of Sarai's name, and it changes the meaning of her name from my little princess to the lordess, the lady. It's the idea of a ruling woman in a community. So Abraham and Sarah are now kind of the king and queen of this growing community, and their names are supposed to reflect that. I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. Now, this is where we get very precise. We know that about 13, almost 14 years ago now, Sarai recommended to Abram, possibly because of a recent conversation that he had had with God, that he should take Hagar, her handmaiden, as the surrogate mother of their child. And there were some problems at the very beginning of that, but Ishmael was born. And for the last 13 years since his birth, he has been effectively the son of Abram and Sarai. But God had not told them to go that route. He had told Abram that I'm going to give you a son of your body. And they had jumped the gun thinking that they could help God out. But now God finally clarifies to them that the plan all along was for Abram and Sarai to have a child together that would be the child of the promise. So I'm going to bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she will become nations. Kings of peoples shall come from her. So that's a repeat of what he just told Abraham. So Abraham and Sarah are both going to be the beginning of a whole bunch of people groups, out of which there will be kings, out of which is there going to be this promised seed that will have the covenant and have the land. Now, verse 17 says that Abraham fell on his face and laughed. And the word for laughed here, it's an onomatopoeia, meaning it sounds like it was supposed to, what it's representing. And it's chuk, chuk. It's kind of a stifled laugh. It's a snigger. It's a chuckle under the breath. And so he fell on his face and he laughed and he said to himself, "Shall a child be born to a man who's 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who's 90 years old, bear a child?" So that's what he says under his breath, quietly. And then he says out loud to God, "And Abraham said to God, 'Oh, that Ishmael might live before you.'" So he has gotten used to the idea that Ishmael is going to be the son of the promise. But God now corrects his misunderstanding and says, verse 19, "No, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Yitzhak," which is based on the word for the snicker, the under-the-breath chuckle that he just did. It means he laughs. And this will not be the last time that somebody laughs about this suggestion that the two of them are going to have a baby in this time of their lives. God continues, "I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. As for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and multiply him greatly. He shall father 12 princes, and I will make him into a great nation." So Ishmael is not going to be forgotten by God. He's not going to be sidelined by God. God cares about Ishmael. He is going to protect him and take good care of him. Let's never forget that. The prophecies here are about how he is also going to become great because he's a child of Abraham. He's going to have specifically 12 princes come from him. So just like Jacob slash Israel has 12 sons, Ishmael will have 12 sons also. But he, Ishmael, is not going to be focused of the main covenant. Verse 21, "But I will establish my covenant with Yitzhak, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this time next year." So that puts about a year time limit on when this must have happened before the birth of Yitzhak or Isaac. Verse 22, "When he had finished talking with him, God went up from Abraham." Now, how did he appear? We don't know. Did he come in a glory cloud? Did he come in some sort of physical body, a dream? We don't know. But once he's gone, verse 23 reports that Abraham took Ishmael, his son, and all those born in his in his house or bought with his money. Pardon me again. Every male among the men of Abraham's house. Now think about how many men that must be. A few years back, we knew that Abram at that time had well over 300 militia members in his community, in his tent house or his tent community. Probably there were several hundred others, either too old to have served in that militia or too young. So several hundreds of men are following through with circumcision at the same time here. And so he circumcised the flesh of their foreskins that very day, as God had said to him. Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. So that tells us exactly relationship to all the other times in his life. Ishmael, his son, was 13 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. That very day, Abraham and his son Ishmael were circumcised. And all the men of his house, those born in the house and those bought with money from a foreigner, were circumcised with him. And this is one of the reasons that circumcision became very widely practiced in the Middle East. Because Abraham's kids, not just the Jewish line, but the Arab line, the Ishmael line, all of them practiced circumcision. And so that's why it was so prominent throughout that part of the world. Genesis chapter 18 now. And he who is appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre. Now remember, the oaks of Mamre are where Hebron is today, or roughly where Hebron is today. As he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. So it's a hot day, and everybody takes a break from their work in the middle of the day to kind of eat a little bit, drink a little bit, maybe take a nap, stay in the shade until they get some strength back and it cools off maybe a little bit, and then they'll get back to work. So he's sitting there in the shade, keeping an eye out, and he sees some strangers. So he lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. So he sees these strangers and he wants to practice great hospitality. Hospitality literally means the love of strangers. It's looking out for the other people's best interests. So he sees these guys traveling in the heat and he wants them to give them a nice midday break as well. So he goes out, verse 3, and says, "Oh Lord," not that he recognized God at this point, because this is God incognito with a couple of angels, but rather he is saying, "Sir," or "Master," my strange friend that I want to help out. "If I have found favor in your sight, don't pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought. Wash your feet, rest yourselves under the tree, while I bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you've said." And Abraham went quickly into the tent to Sarah and said, "Quick, three seahs of fine flour, knead it and make cakes." So make three portions of hot flat bread. And verse 7, Abraham ran to the herd. He took a calf, tender and good, gave it to a young man who prepared it quickly. And you might think that that'd take a while, but not really. You can butcher out a young calf in a matter of minutes, get it on a spit, and it's going to be ready to carve some meat off of it in a matter of an hour or so. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he prepared and set it before him. So he's got all the makings of a nice midday restful meal. And then he stood by them under the tree while they ate. And they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "She's in the tent." Now, I wonder whether or not he was puzzled by them knowing his wife's name. But on with the story. He who is said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." Now, with those words, I think it ought to have clicked with Abraham that this is God visiting him, because that's pretty much what he'd said to him in the previous encounter. Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. The way of women had ceased to be with Sarah, which means she's postmenopausal. It is physically impossible for her to get pregnant by now. Then he who is said to Abraham, verse 12. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I'm worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure?" And he who is said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a son now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for he who is?' At the appointed time, I will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied it, saying, "I didn't laugh," for she was afraid. See, that's kind of a scary thing. And he said, "No, but you did laugh," which is another reason why this couple was required to name the son that they're about to have Yitzhak, or laughter.